When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the 38th episode of the Pirate Rugby Pod. We've got a jam-packed show coming up today covering rugby broadcasting, the European Cup semi-finals, and our first ever interview with a former world champion sevens player. And we'll, of course, go through the usual roundup from around the rugby world. You know the drill, but if you haven't already, please like, share, subscribe, and smash that notification bell.
You can also check us out on TikTok, where we upload short-form content all the time, plus our Substack, where you can get long-read articles. This week, we talked about how the new TRC Under-20s tournament is long overdue and discussed why Sanzar took so long to make such a thing. But now, without further ado, let's introduce our extremely special guest. It's our first ever former player on the pod. Did we go for some obscure, unknown guy playing in the Amazon rainforest? Did we go to some women's player coming in from Indonesia? No, we thought we'd start with a big bang and go with a former Blitzbok, current international level backs coach, Vuyo Sangwa. Vuyo, thank you so much, aka Coach V, aka Vickers. Cheers for being here.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for the invite. I mean, met you two fellas during the World Cup, and we've had some very good times on other pods. And thank you very much for the invite.
Right, we're super excited, but we're doubly excited this week as we go into the moment of the week. The moment of the week this week is sponsored by Manscaped. Yes, really. So, are you ready to soak up some summer vibes and unveil your ultimate beach body? Well, you're in luck, because our friends at Manscaped have you covered head to toe. With the Performance Package 5.0 Ultra, this ultimate all-in-one grooming kit is set to have you looking and feeling your best this summer. Trust Manscaped to unlock the confidence you need to turn heads this season. Join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped, and you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code PIRATERUGBY. That's P-I-R-A-T-E, all capital letters, 20, 2-0, PIRATE20 for free shipping and 20% off at checkout. Let's make this summer your smoothest yet. I've got my Manscaped t-shirt, and I've got my Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 that they've sent over, and this thing is absolutely ridiculous. I'm going to turn on self-view so I can show the people. So for audio listeners, just take my word for it, it's incredible. So you got all this stuff. This is like so much stuff they sent for us. It's like our first sponsors package ever. You've got the normal 5.0 trimmer, you've got the weed whacker, and trust me, right, okay, nose hair and ear hair affects all of us. You don't want to be walking around looking like a walrus. This nose and ear hair trimmer is a lifesaver, I promise. But if you get the full package, you get the crop preserver, you get the crop soother, all the nice gels and creams and things. You get a wash bag, you get boxers, you get a free set of boxer shorts with it. Honestly, if you could use our code PIRATE20 to help us out. I'm looking at you Leinster fans, I know you've got money. I saw you all joking about your Range Rovers getting nicked while you were all at Croker at the weekend, right? So if you could just sort us out with using the code a couple of times, really appreciate that. Remember, get 20% off and free shipping with the code PIRATERUGBY at Manscaped. Cheers. Right, on with the moment of the week. Having got all that out of the way, I'm so giddy. That's our first ever sponsorship. So who had moment of the week? Well, my moment of the week was my trip to Gloucester, where I got to meet up with the Spritz and Scrums crew. We've had them on the pod in the past, and I got to hang out with them in King's Home, went for a drink afterwards, et cetera, et cetera. Absolutely loved it. Class day out. Unfortunately, Benetton didn't get the result for the URC Best League, but still, at least the weather was lovely. So that was my moment of the week. Shout out to Spritz and Scrums for taking me in and making my day. Ender, what was your moment?
My moment of the week was Siemiatkowski's 71st minute conversion to take the lead against, for the Sharks to take the lead against Clermont on the weekend in the Challenge Cup semi-final. This has been coming, I think, and it's great to see the Sharks finally string some really good results together. Like they're 13th in the URC table right now, which is just, with a team with that much talent, they shouldn't be down there. And they've really put a lot of effort into this competition. First South African side to make a final as well. So I think it's absolutely massive for them. It's great to see. It's where they should be. And this guy, we'll talk about him later. He's been really good the last couple of games, and it's class occasion, I think, as well, just for South Africans in London. It wasn't the biggest crowd, but you were never going to get close to a sellout when the Sharks are playing that far from Durban. But it was still great to see a large contingent of Saffers there. So great occasion overall, but what a conversion and what an occasion for the Sharks. What about yourself, Buya? What would be your moment of the week?
Yeah, for me, it was a surprise, actually. I didn't know that the championships, basically like the rugby championships under 20, they started with the mark on the kickoff. So if you kick it inside the 22 without any bounce, then you can mark it, and then you can basically get an easy exit, which is going to be massive when it comes to, obviously, if that rule is implemented in with the bigger teams, like with Springboks, they rely so much on that, putting that pressure on that kick. So, yeah, so things like that just made my weekend thought, okay, now it's going to get interesting in rugby.
Yeah, I can't wait to see if that rule gets implemented. Unfortunately, we can't watch the under-20s TRC in the UK because there's no broadcast, but looking forward to seeing the discourse about it. I'm sure we'll talk about it on Scoop as well. So with some listeners' moments of the week then. So Maz says Moana Pacifica, playing their first ever game in Tonga, was her moment of the week. Played in torrential conditions. They love a bit of rain on the Pacific Islands. But it looked fantastic. Unfortunately, Moana didn't get the win, but what a great moment. Harry Jones says Eben Etzebeth being the most terrifying kick chaser in the world of rugby, winning that ball for the try that got the result for the Sharks in the end. Both Julia and John, who have got nothing to do with each other, said that Madagascar beating Kenya in the Women's African Cup to have a shot at WXV3, that is a fantastic result. We know that rugby is huge in Madagascar, and to see their women's team, apparently it's like a 20-odd thousand crowd as well. Incredible. Absolutely love it. Stephen says the Sharks beating Clermont to reach the first final in 12 years. And a little-known Twitter account called Scrumming Fly Half says the story about players from an unnamed team telling the Springboks "see you in the final" was his moment of the week. We'll move on. We'll move on before we upset people. So, Ender, let's begin the show with Leinster. Why did this game end up being so close for you?
It was a European Cup semi-final, first and foremost. Like, I think a lot of people I've forgotten that. Like, I know Leinster have been very good this season. They did smash La Rochelle, but we all know that La Rochelle haven't had the best season, and they were after traveling back from South Africa. Excuse, I know, but like, I think there was just ridiculously high expectations for Leinster in this game, and yes, like, I think they completely outplayed the team in the first half, and I thought they did really well. But like, let's not forget who Northampton are and what they've achieved so far this season. They're top of the Gallagher Prem. Their joint highest with try bonus points. Like, they score tries. And one weakness they definitely had in previous seasons was their defense, and it's something they worked on, you know. So they did limit Leinster to an extent. So I just think there's a bit of perspective needed here for me. You don't run away with, you know, in European Cup semifinals. They're always tight. So I think people just need to maybe just lower their expectations, I think, for Leinster in terms of, you have to respect the opposition. Like, you know, it was a brilliant occasion, massive crowd, game at Croker, all of that. But at the end of the day, they were playing quality opposition. But one thing I will have to say, though, about Northampton there, even before the game, I did expect Leinster to win, not by a massive margin, but I did expect maybe Northampton to show a bit more, particularly in that first half. It's like the occasion got to them, or maybe it was Nina Barra's defence, I don't know, but the amount of handling errors they made was incredibly frustrating. This game had 15 scrums and no scrum resets, which is something we're all happy about.
Great stat.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I was watching that. That was the stat at the end then of the game. But yeah, look, just I think people just need perspective on this one. Great win for Leinster. They motor on. It looks like their injuries aren't too serious, thankfully, for Joe McCartney and for Kieran Fawley. So it looks like they'll be in a good stead for the final. But yeah, I just think it's the European Cup semi-final, guys. Like, let's rein it in here a bit.
82,000 for a club game is absolutely insane, by the way. Like, someone posted joking, like, oh, that's more than the Welsh regions get for a whole season. But then I did the math and I was like, oh, yeah, it actually is. If you add it up, like 6,000 a game, 11 home games a season. No, yeah, okay, yeah, the maths, unfortunately. So that one stung a bit. But anyway, moving on to the other semi-final, Toulouse versus Quins. We obviously saw some might say an unserious game of rugby, but a very joué and attacking game of rugby. And VR, I kind of want to get your thoughts on this. Is being an elite level backs coach, you see these two teams who offload and they run everything and they attack. How do you create a team that plays in that way? How do you coach players to not only have the vision to do these things, but also be able to execute them? What does training look like for these teams, do you think?
Look, yeah, you have to create sort of like a chaos training. You have to allow the players to have freedom. I think also it does boil down to the coach in terms of how much freedom the coach, how much the players feel close to the coach. And you get a lot of players who do such things because the freedom that they've given by the coaches, it's so good that the players feel like, you know, we used to say when you were growing up playing rugby, you used to say, enjoy it. So a lot of coaches, you do use those words. And I mean, if you can be able to replicate that in the training sessions and make sure that your training sessions are enjoyable, your training sessions are a little bit of chaos, just having fun and as much as coaches are in control, we also have to remember the players are professional players, and they do understand the magnitude of the cup games and especially knockout games. So they wouldn't do things that they know that it wouldn't work on a normal day. So you do get that we do give them that kind of freedom. And like I said, you just create some chaos trainings where players are just having a lot of fun and obviously playing with the ball, and that's the most important. As Ando was actually talking, I was just thinking in terms of Leinster, isn't the fact that their coaches were stuck in South Africa for 2 weeks before that cup game, maybe it had an effect on the players because they didn't, they brought all their top coaches. They didn't leave anyone. I don't know if they left. They probably left the academy coaches back with those players. So maybe something also that obviously the normal fans wouldn't know. And maybe that's something that we, like you guys are saying now, it plays a factor because it is a cup game at the end of the day. And obviously the Northampton probably had more better preparation than Leinster.
It's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. So let's move on to the Challenge Cup semi-final now then. And again, coming back to you, I want to get your take on the impact of one player. We know that the Sharks have got an incredible lineup and an incredible back line, forward back of all Springboks. Well, there's one guy who everyone's talking about now who isn't a Springbok yet, and that's Siya Masuku. What have you made of his impact on this Sharks team?
Yeah, look, The kid has just gone through a up and down journey. When he left school, he was signed by the Lions, and when the Lions things didn't go well, he went to the Southern Kings. So I was part of his coaching. I was coaching there, and then he ended up at the Cheetahs, and then that's when he started performing. I think with Siya, what I've noticed with Siya is that he's a very confident player. He's one of those players that wants to try things. He's one of those players that's not afraid of attacking the line, is not afraid of trying something new. And I think with the kind of team that the Sharks have in terms of those Springboks, he gets that confidence from himself because he knows that he's got quality team. Even if the mistakes happen, they'll be able to fight back and obviously fix it. And I think with the Sharks, what they've done is they probably, because they waited for quite a while before he made his first, maybe for the team. And I think they were just waiting for that moment where he starts to show more training. And I think with the moment they showed more training, and the coaches were like, okay, let's give him a go. And I mean, the guy's got four men of the matches out of five games. And every game that he started, they've won now. So it's amazing how he's going. And I can only be happy for him. And hopefully he'll get more accolades going forward.
So being someone who's coached him before then, with players, you know, you get to, coaches talk about like, oh, from the moment I saw him, I knew. Was it a case of that, or was it a case of he needs to change a few things and then he could really take off?
Yeah, I think that's the thing with Sia, is that you can see the talent, but it's just a matter of he's so reserved and he's so in his corner that you don't get to see that this is a player to go with. But the more you work with him, the more he does mistakes in training and the more that you can understand him. And as a player, on how he behaves, because it's a lot about his personality. And then that's when you can start to feel confident as a coach. And I think that's, like I said, a guy like Dave Williams, who's worked with all over the world in terms of just rugby, he will give him that freedom. And probably between the two of them, they've got the best relationship. And I think that's why Sia is replicating that in terms of on the field.
And do you think he's got a shot at that box jersey? Maybe in the game against Wales?
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I was actually thinking about the Wales because remember they were talking about Chesney starting at 10. I think I saw some news that Chesney might start at 10. I think now that Wales game is actually going to be very interesting for the coaching staff at the box. Because, I mean, if they give Sia that game and it comes out of their top, why not include him? Because you must remember, South Africa doesn't have a number 3-10. We have two guys. We have Pollard and we have Manny Lubok. So, I mean, at the moment, if he can hang on that number 3 jersey, that would be great for him because that means that he will be able to travel in most of the tournaments.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, and just quickly before we move off this, so we spoke about Leinster and their coaches going down to South Africa and back again. We've spoken about the Sharks, how they were in the UK for a 3-week tour, essentially, for this game. And now they're going back down again to fight in the URC. As someone coming from a sevens background where you travel so much all around the world all the time, how do you handle and plan for travel and make sure that, you know, even if you're in a completely different time zone, you can be in the right place for when you play the game?
Yeah, I think it just depends. You know, when you travel abroad, you must remember when you travel abroad, you got to stay in a hotel. We're all together in a hotel. And then it gets easier to bond as a group because we all see each other every day for every meal. But when you're at home, we're all now separated. We go our separate ways. We sleep at home. So in terms of how you approach it, when you're on tour, it's very easy to approach in terms of, guys, we're going to give you this day off. You can do what you need for recovery. Whereas when you go home, all of a sudden things are different. And I think when you look at the Sharks, going home now, for them, it will probably be a different team this weekend. And obviously, because the URC for them is done. So they're going to try and put their mindset in terms of that final and just give it a go.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. Thank you so much. So for me, the game that I'll just quickly touch on was Gloucester versus Benetton, the game I was at. I was at the Gloucester quarterfinal as well against the Ospreys. And it was a very similar game in that I felt that the visiting team kind of played the more rugby, but Gloucester went to their set piece. Their scrum didn't go amazing in the first half and the Benetton's line out very well, but Gloucester kind of just had like 3 or 4 things that they do and they keep doing them and they do them well. And Benetton really, I think, didn't show up. I was kind of talking to the Spritz and Scrums guys afterwards and they were saying together, you know, Benetton were a bit nice, whereas Gloucester were willing to just roll their sleeves up and really get into it. Zach Mercer is like everything to them. If he went down, it would be a disaster. I think he made such a huge difference. And I think the home advantage made a huge difference as well, because there was one or two decisions which you thought, if this was in Benetton, could have gone the other way. But, you know, you get that by winning all your pool stages. If you win all your pool stage games, you get to play at home until the final. And this is Gloucester's 5th Challenge Cup final. You know, this is a team that's normally in and around the bottom half of the English Premiership. This is the 5th Challenge Cup final, so you can have an affinity for this tournament. So fair play, and Gloucester's a great day out. I recommend it to anyone.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Anyway, that brings us to the end of talking about the European Cup. So, Ender, let's start talking about our amazing guest.
Yeah, but also we just really want to get to hear about your experience and, I guess, your current role now. So you're currently coaching in Russia, isn't that right? So could you maybe just explain to us a bit about what's going on with rugby in Russia at the moment in terms of can you play international teams and all that? And what's that like? And is it mainly the sevens you're focused on now, the national team, or do you want to talk us through who you're coaching at the moment?
Yeah, so at the moment I'm currently working with Zastava, the rugby club. They have a fully professional sevens setup, so I'm the head coach of that, and so then I was appointed as the head coach of the Russian sevens team. So at the moment I'm kind of just focusing on sevens. And how rugby in Russia looks at the moment is that we're just playing like normal tournaments, like a seven circuit. We're playing two rounds and then go 3 months and another two rounds. So it's just a matter of we're not allowed to play internationally. I mean, we're still waiting for the go ahead to be able to compete. But at the moment, we're just focusing on clubs. And then in terms of the 15s, they obviously have a fully Russian championships going on. So they have like a own league where they have three cups. They have a knockout cup, and then they have a one cup where it's just obviously like a long league. So they obviously doing that throughout the year. The 15s normally stop playing around about November, and they pick it up again in April. So that you do get that kind of a 5-4 month break. Because obviously it does get a little bit tough to play rugby in those winter conditions. Yeah. But yeah, so yeah. But other than that, it is pretty good for Russian rugby at the moment within Russia. But again, we're losing a lot of talent. I mean, some guys that were amazing rugby players at 28 years old are now reaching the stages of 31, 32, and without not knowing when they will ever compete international again. So yeah, it's pretty sad in that regard, but there's a lot of youngsters coming through, and hopefully they'll get the opportunity to represent their country in the future.
And you've coached in many places, isn't that right? Like you've coached in Kenya, Lithuania, Namibia, Germany. Like, what have those experiences been like? Have you've kind of seen, like, we all read and hear about, you know, tier one rugby and all that, but you've really been, you know, you've been around and you've seen rugby in other emerging nations. What have those different experiences been like for you?
Yeah, they've been amazing. I mean, my growth as a coach started out very quickly because I was involved with the Springbok Sevens as an assistant coach, and then when I left that in 2013, I went to Kenya. I got to see a different side of appreciation in terms of where you come from, what you used to. We have such a, you could call it in the tier one nations of rugby, we are so privileged. Even something like rugby balls, we have probably new rugby balls every 2 months or something like that. And I mean, you get here, you get guys in those tier two nations or tier three nations where they don't have that kind of luxury. They basically rely on what they have, which is a little bit of infrastructure, a little bit of obviously your rugby your rugby equipment. So you have to make it work. So what I've learned from that is I've learned to adapt within myself, within my coaching structures. If I can make two examples, for example, in Kenya, we used to train at 6 o'clock in the morning so that we can release the guys at 8 to go to university. And then we train in the afternoon, and similar to Germany. In Germany, we used to train at between the 8 in the morning and half past 9 in the morning, and then release the guys to uni. So you never get that in like a tier one nations because the players are fully professional. So when you sign a player, you sign them for big money. They more stable in terms of their salary. So you don't really, you have your players throughout the day. And now when you come to a tier two or three nation, you find that you have, there's some sort of adjustments that you need to do as a coach, because you have to allow the kids to better their, themselves, to better their future. And when that happens in terms of, because they're not getting paid as much, you then you have to obviously have sort of an adaptable mind within your space.
And what's kind of, when you get into a new environment, so you've gone to a lot of different places with a lot of different cultures. So when you go in there, what's the first thing that you do? What's the first, do you go in and you go, right, I'm the boss now, so this is how I want things done? Or are you going in and is it a very absorptive process where you're just trying to learn as much as you can about the new environment that you're in?
Yeah, so I focus quite a lot on the culture of the people that I'm going to. So I do tend to do a lot of background on the culture, how the people are within the that country, and how the people behave, and what are the struggles of the country politically. For funny enough, politically and just socially and business wise, just to understand what am I working with, and so that as soon as I start engaging with the players and that I'm working with, I can then start to understand who's where, who, what kind of level they're coming from, so that I can understand them. And that's helped me quite a lot, because it's almost like a template that I have, that I go and allow the people of that country to show me who they are, so that I can be able to assist them in terms of how to move on forward. So I always recommend for coaches going in those kind of situations is to allow the people to show you who they are, so that you can be able to give them your best ability and your best assets as a coach. Because if you're going to get there and start dictating, you might find some resistance, and that's, as a coach, you don't want to start in that level. So you always want to start where everyone's feeling excited, everyone's happy about the new appointment of the coach. So if that happens, then you always find that your system starts in a proper way, and then slowly and surely you start to change the mindset of the players. And it's also very good to have an opportunity to actually bring in a psychologist who can actually give you some background information on some of the players.
What's something that you've gone in, the diversity of places that you've been is absolutely incredible. Have you got a memory or something of you walking in somewhere and be like, oh, this is very different to what I'm used to?
Yeah, so my first time in Kenya, when we worked in Kenya, we thought, okay, we're gonna get there, we're gonna have like this, because this team was actually beating us when I was in South Africa, and when we got there, we were so shocked to see they only had the containers that you get at the harbor.
Yeah.
So they had that as their office. They had that as they had a small building. And then they had that as their office. They had another one as the boardroom. And in my mind, I was shocked. I was like, these guys, how can a team so ranked, so highly rated, so highly within the servant circuit have this kind of infrastructure? So that was kind of eye-opening for me. And I think because of the mentality that I went in there with, it actually helped me quite a lot to just absorb everything and just try and understand where did this come from and how did we get here, so that we can make it better.
You learn all the languages when you go to these different countries. Can you speak Lithuanian and stuff?
Oh, I can, Lithuanian is actually the one language that I didn't even try to learn, but a little bit of Swahili from Kenya. I speak a little bit of Russian. I speak a little bit of German, so I do try. You also, when you're with your players and you crack a joke in their home language, they actually love it. So for me, that's quite nice. And I always do try to learn something, but always in rugby, they want to teach you the swear words first. So yeah.
Yeah, you can pick it up dead fast, I'm sure. So you spoke about the culture before, and this is something that you've spoken to me about in the past, and I love this. Well, on my master's degree, I wrote about changing the cultures of organizations and things. So you go into an environment and they've got a certain culture. and say it's a team that's perhaps not winning, it's a team that you've got to turn around. How do you put your culture on a team? Is that possible? Is it possible to put a culture on a group of people, or are you just going to be fighting a losing battle from day one there?
Yeah, I think it is actually definitely possible. So firstly, when you go in, you look at how the players' behavior is on the field in terms of training, in terms of games, and then you look at the players' personalities, and then you start slowly to get rid of the personalities that you don't want, and you start getting the personalities that you want. So for me, it's always been the fact that I look at training first, and I look at how the guys are delivering. It's one of the things that I actually pride myself on, because I've always said to my friends that I'm mentoring is that if your team is getting a lot of yellow cards, that means that you as a coach have failed, because you have to understand you have to be hard on the team right then, because if we are going to start to get a yellow card, that means that we are an ill-disciplined team. And you don't want to be labeled as an ill-disciplined team going into a game, because even the ref now is starting to put that in his mind. So, and that starts with culture, and that starts back home, that starts in training. So what are you allowing in training? So we always talk about arriving 20 minutes before training, and then we always talk about arriving 5 minutes before meetings. So it's actually been said, but you know, when someone comes in and walks in right when the meeting is about to start, and you actually chase them out and you tell them to go and sit outside, they can wait for us. And as soon as that meeting is done, they're either there, then you know that's the right person when they're there outside, or they've gone back to their rooms, then you know that that person actually doesn't belong in your system. So I've had players where they've come to me after a meeting and sat with me and said, "Coach, I apologize. What was the meeting about?" And I start and I do it, because they show that they want to be part of the system.
That's so cool. That's so fascinating. So we've spoken before about, you were telling me about how if you've got a player, you know, we were talking about problem players or problem coaches, and, you know, so you got someone like Danny Cipriani has spoken about, do you really have problem players, or do you have problem coaches who can't adapt to that player? And you were telling me about how if you identify someone who's causing a couple of issues in the group, you get the leadership team and you discuss it with them. What's that process like?
Yeah, so that process always starts with the coach and the player. So, for example, get the player outside the environment. Don't have the player within the environment, because when you have within the environment, they have a situation or an escape code, because you can't really, they can't really open themselves up. They will try and use their ego to make the coach look bad. So I always try to get them out of their comfort, like outside the environment. So I always go for coffee, even a couple of beers, or even a dinner, just to understand who I'm working with. And then obviously within that, as soon as that you've had that meeting with the player, you also need to make your leadership group aware of what is happening within the system, because they are aware of what is happening. They are aware, but they don't know how to fix it, because maybe this guy is the same age as them, or maybe even the player is in the leadership group. So you, sometimes you do get those kind of players, but I always go personal with the player first, and then I'll involve the leadership group. And then if it continues, then I do, like we discussed before here, I do leave up the conversation with the leadership group. Do we get rid of the player, or are you guys going to sort it out? So we do get to that point, but that's like a long process where, as a coach, you also have to take responsibility of being a leader within the system.
Love that so much.
And moving then on maybe to your 15s experience then, Fuyo, especially with the Southern Kings, who unfortunately are no longer with us as a side in the ORC. Can you maybe just talk us through what went wrong at that franchise? Like, from my own experience, I remember watching their games. I know, look, we all know they struggled on the pitch. I think it was quite clear that maybe they didn't have the resources and the budget compared to other teams. But one frustrating thing was definitely like it seemed like they were one of those teams who were playing in an enormous stadium and they couldn't get crowds and couldn't build that atmosphere. But could you maybe just talk us through what went wrong at the Southern Kings, and are there any plans? It's in based in Port Elizabeth, isn't that right? Like where you're based when you're home and stuff. Like, are there any plans to get money back into the Southern Kings, or what's the next step for that region?
Yeah, look, I think the biggest thing is that with the Southern Kings, when they were taken over after they had such bad struggles, I think it was the early 2012-13, so they had big financial problems, and that was taken obviously by the mother board. So whenever someone comes in and try to buy the Southern Kings or revamp the Southern Kings, they still have a debt to settle. So I think it is a little bit more difficult to just go in and unless you've got obviously an enormous amount of money. But what happened to the Southern Kings is just, I think because as you say, Ender, we couldn't fill up the stadiums. We weren't winning many games going overseas. So we sort of lost touch with the people. We sort of lost touch with the love of rugby within our city. And this city is actually one of the biggest rugby cities. I mean, I don't know if you know, Rusty comes from literally not too far from here. He's from Dispatch, which is very close to Port Elizabeth. So the rugby that's happened here, that's being played here, the history of rugby is massive in this country. And I think that's when things started not happening, and then obviously with COVID coming in, I think the Southern Kings just went into more debt and more debt, and I think that's when they decided to close it. So it's a little bit more tricky when it comes to what happened, but that's probably what obviously the mother board will probably be able to answer to a lot more people that need to ask the questions.
Was it really hand to mouth for you guys when you were fighting those two Pro 14 campaigns, going abroad and things? And was it really like you're going day by day just trying to survive? Because the Cheetahs did reasonably well in the Pro 14, but you guys really struggled at times. Was it just did it always feel like you were fighting a losing battle?
Yeah. So look. So I'll explain this. You have to understand how. The team was formed. So you understand why it felt like we were fighting a lot of or losing battles. Because if you look at the Southern Kings, they didn't have a development team to breed to the Southern Kings. So we had to go to the Sharks, we had to go to the Bulls and get their players that they don't need. So if they have a fly half who's the fifth best within their system, then that fly half will be given to us on loan, and we would have to obviously pay. And then same with the Sharks, same with the Stormers, same with the Lions. So we got a lot of players who were sort of like fourth to fifth string players within their provinces. And then we have to try and make those players come together. I think the best player that we've ever had within the province is actually now, when I think about it, Sia Masuku, who's been now at the Sharks. It's Eldrick Lowe, who's actually left the Southern Kings to the Bulls.
He's had an incredible season.
He's such a massive guy in terms of even in training, he doesn't stop. He gives it 100%. A very good kid to work with. Another player actually you might know I forgot now. He's a centre who played at Benetton. But now he's back at the Lions, I think. He was a centre at Benetton.
Is it Creel, is it?
No, not Creel. I just forgot his name now. So he was also, so it's part of those, it's one of those players where you it's one of those provinces that you basically have to show the Bulls why you signed this guy. So if the Bulls signed, give us their fifth tight end prop, and he starts performing for Southern Kings, and the Bulls are going to be like, okay, we want him back. So that's why he was always fighting a losing battle. And also, it didn't help that because the players knew that the Southern Kings is not sustainable, the players played for themselves most of the time, because then it's very hard to bring a team culture there, because everyone is looking after their own interest. And yeah, so, but we can't blame the players for that. It was the environment that they were in.
Yeah. I've got the Lions squad up. So centers Box, Cronje, Jonker. Cronje.
It's Cronje. Yeah, Cronje.
Yeah, okay. I love these stories. I'm planning a little feature probably on the Substack of the Southern Kings team that beats the Ospreys in Swansea. Where are they now? And obviously you've got players like Sitsi and Masuka who are doing great and things. So I'm trying to note down these. Well. Sorry?
Cronje was there as well.
Yeah. I noticed you smiling. Was that an incredible moment for you guys, your first ever away win?
Yeah, look, it was the first one. We knew going into that game that we were going to be in trouble. But you know when things start to fall in your favor. And everything just started working for us. So we actually got so much happiness after the game, because it was massive for us. And it's one of those memories where even the coaches were crying in the clock room after the game. So, yeah, it was pretty special.
And then final question before we move on to our rugby around the world then. So when you see coaches get hammered by, whether it's fans or media, you look at players like John Plumtree's struggled at the Sharks at the beginning of the season. You look at what Scott Penny's going through with the Stormers right now. Do you think, what goes through your mind when you see that? And do you think that every coach deserves a full season to see what they can do? Or do you think that, you know, if it's not working, it's not working, and it's time to move on?
Yeah, I think you have to go deeper into that. I think you have to go deeper and understand what is the coach bringing and what are the plans that they have. I think I'm a firm believer that as a coach, your players in the field need to show me the culture of the team. And if the administrators within that particular province are looking at the things that they've been worked on a training and it's being translated to the field, but you're just not getting the luck of the bounce, that's understandable. You can give the coach the full season. But when you can start to, for example, like I mentioned earlier, when the team is starting to get yellow cards, red cards, and penalty after penalty, then you're starting to have, I think I was watching, I can't remember when one team had 16 penalties within the first half. And you go to yourself and you say, but what is going on? Why aren't the players taking pride within the jersey? So that becomes a bit of a question when I would say for administrators. But if they can see progress, if they can see the lack of the bounce was just not for us, then that's where the leeway comes in. But unfortunately, as coaches, it's what we signed up for. And if you're a guy that can't fix the problem, then unfortunately you probably won't be lasting in the professional era.
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you so much for that. So, Ender, do we want to crack on with rugby around the world then?
Yeah, let's do it. So let's start off in the Southern Hemisphere. So we had the Rugby Championship under 20s, as we mentioned. So New Zealand beat Argentina 43-20 in round two, meaning they're the only unbeaten team left. Australia got a somewhat surprise win over the Baby Bucks, 24-19. Voyo, any thoughts on this tournament over? Like you mentioned the new law that's been introduced as on a trial basis, but what are your thoughts on the tournament so far?
Yeah, I think it's been amazing. I mean, it's our first ever under 20 this kind of competition, and I think it's like way long overdue. First day, it was the rain. It was like playing in a swimming pool, basically. I think the both teams, South Africa and New Zealand, and both the four teams did struggle. And funny enough, New Zealand played in dry conditions, and then all of a sudden, when the Springboks were running against Australia, started raining. But I think, look, it's so good to see for us, because these are the next generation Springboks, and we haven't won the World Cup under 20 in a while, I mean, you guys play the European teams play the U20 Six Nations. So we normally go into the World Cup with no game practice. And for the first time, we're going to go into a World Cup with coming back at the back end of a championship like this. So it's truly amazing. And I think if it continues this way, it's actually going to become something special, because we're going to see the next generation of players who are playing. Imagine seeing a guy playing in 2027 World Cup who's played this year in 2024. Truly something special.
Yeah, that's exactly how we feel about the under 26 nations as well. So it's like you said, it's long overdue.
And hopefully next year we'll actually get to watch it on this in this side of the world. Let's move on to Super Rugby. So Lee Halfpenny made his debut for the Crusaders, but they still managed to lose at home to the Reds. Special shout out to Les Kiss. What a job he's doing with the Reds. What else? There was a big win for the Chiefs, putting 50 on the force. Vuo, who are you backing for the title this year?
Oh, that's rough. We spoke about it on the space a few weeks ago. Oh, that's rough. Look, like we say, we talk about the Crusaders just making, if they could make that quarterfinal, you can't count them out. But, I mean, with the late low at the Hurricanes, I think it's probably between Hurricanes, Blues, and the Reds. But the Reds have been up and down lately. But I think those three teams are probably looking good to win it.
Brumbies have started clicking lately as well.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's very competitive this year, which I think is a welcome change to previous years. Like, you don't want to see like the Crusaders kind of suffering, but not performing that well. But I think it's definitely made the tournament more enjoyable this year. Let's move on to Japan Rugby League One. So the big result was Olympus putting nearly 60 points on Blue Revs. Former Ospreys and Scarlet centre Michael Collins scored a try. And Richie Moanga picked up 19 points. Not a bad day at the office. And Wild Knights kept their 100% record with a win over Cannon Eagles. Hugh, what's going on in Super Rugby Americas?
So Pampas beat Dogos in the Argentinian derby to move 4 points clear at the top of the table with a game in hand. And then there was some women's rugby that was played last week that we forgot to mention. So apologies for that. It's the Pacific Four. So this is like, it's a bit like the Rugby Championship. So it's Canada, America, USA, Canada, America, Australia, and New Zealand, I want to say, play in this one. And there's only been one game so far, more games this week, and USA beat Canada 50 points to 7. No, sorry, Canada beat USA 50 points to 7. Important to get that the right way around. You were telling us previously that Russia's women's team, I don't know if it's the 15s or the 7s, was really highly ranked, and it's kind of almost completely gone now.
Yeah, it was the 7s. The 7s ladies, they went to the Olympics in 2021. They were ranked number 6 in the world. So it literally, as soon as everything started and the sanctions, they lost those girls. So now most of those girls have actually looked for other opportunities in terms of just moving on with their lives. So, yeah, it is a little bit tough, but, it is what it is.
Yeah, unfortunate the way these things go. So, Pacific Four is Canada, Australia, New Zealand, USA. I was correct. Anyway, moving into the Northern Hemisphere. So, there was no Top 14, no Pro De Deux, no AIL, no English Prem, but there was Ender, some English Championship.
Was indeed, and former Wales player Lloyd Williams scored as Wheeling beat Hill. And Coventry are up to 8 wins in a row as they beat London Scottish. There was also MLR action, so Free Jacks and Sabercats are still top of either conference, although Chicago Hounds did win away at the Free Jacks. Matt Gitto, at age, I don't know what, 77, played for San Diego Legion as they beat Dallas Jackals. What's going on in the Welsh Prem?
So we're in the last throes of the competition now. So semi-finals, Newport beat Ebervale in the Gwent Derby and Llandovery beat Cardiff. Scarlets, prodigy and Wales under-20s player Max Page scoring a bit of a worldie in that one. He looks like he could be playing regional rugby before too long. So it's the big final now between clearly the two best teams in the tournament were Newport and Llandovery, and they're going to be playing at Llandovery for the final. It's going to be a huge game, and we'll definitely share all the links of how to watch it when it's finally being played. And then finally, if there's ever any results that we don't speak about in our rugby roundup, rugby around the world, a great Twitter account to follow is Emerging Rugby. They really plumb the depths. They can tell you everything that's going on in places like Indonesia, stuff like that. There's a Rugby Europe trophy going on at the moment as well that we don't always have time to cover. So if you're ever missing a result that we don't talk about on here, Emerging Rugby, give them a follow on Twitter. You'll get all of the news and headlines from them. Anyway, let's go into the Rugby TV guide. And Ender, we had a question from the viewers on YouTube last week. So Mark Macken asks, "Hi, I would love to know the individual URC TV deals and what they all add up to in order to give an overall sum to attribute to the URC and its TV deal worth compared to other leagues. Also, how is that money distributed to clubs?" So this is something that comes up a lot, and I think we've discussed it in the very early days of the Pirate Rugby Pod, like episode 2 or 3. So what's your understanding of the URC deal and how that money gets shared around between the clubs?
So the deal, it was reported by the Financial Times, and this was years ago, so this was before the launch of the direct-to-consumer streaming service, URC TV. This is before the recent deal with Sky Italia in Italy. So the initial figure touted was about £55 million sterling, which is a really big figure. It's higher than the Gallagher Prem, not near the top 14, but certainly higher than the Gallagher Prem. That was up from about £25 million. So very impressive figure in terms of that breakdown. Like, so as the person who asked the question mentioned, like there are multiple deals within this. So you've got a deal with free-to-air broadcasters in Ireland, you've got a deal with the BBC, you've got a deal with, you know, Premier Sports, all of these different things. So they don't, like, there's no breakdown available anywhere. I've looked into it, there is no breakdown. So that's the rough figure anyway. It's from a reliable source in terms of the Financial Times. And also, it's actually quite difficult to find out how that money is distributed amongst the various clubs. You'd imagine that it's fairly equal, but we'll have to look into that more. But from what I could gather at the moment, it is not yet possible to see how that money is distributed. But again, still a pretty impressive figure. I think a lot of people will probably be surprised about that. But as you mentioned, we did discuss this on an earlier pod. So more than the Gallagher Prem, but not quite at top 14. At a top 14 level yet. And then just in terms of the EPCR TV deal. So I know what, you know, what there's this argument out there that, you know, rugby media rights have hit their peak. And I think we've seen another example of that. And that was the news that emerged yesterday from the Times that TNT Sports are stalling on renewing their rights for the European Cup. So in terms of the Challenge Cup and the Champions Cup, to me it's just a negotiation tactic, but they are apparently saying that their, you know, their costs have increased because they're showing more games, because there are more games now from South Africa. Now I've no doubt that their costs have increased, but this is clearly a negotiation tactic, and there's virtually no media rights competition in this part of the world at the moment for rugby. So I think they're like, there's no doubt in my mind, like, I know there have been some sensationalist kind of headlines out there, not from the Times, but from other places saying that, you know, we could see EPCR lose a broadcaster. That's not going to be the case. TNT are going to get it. They're going to get it at a reduced rate, just like they did the last time around as well, which a lot of people don't know. And the last TV rights deal was actually worth less than the previous one, just like the Gallagher Prem's recent announcement as well. Their next two-year deal is worth a reported 5% less than their previous one. Again, that previous one was worth less than the one before that. So rugby media rights are going in one direction in the UK and Ireland. We'll see where the URC goes, but those rights aren't up for renewal until 2025. But yeah, so for EPCR, yeah,
go ahead. It's ironic, isn't it? Because EPCR was formed because of a falling out over TV money.
Yeah, one of the reasons, and now we can't get anywhere near the previous figure, and there's literally no competition. It's just TNT Sports. They're gonna get it, and apparently they're only gonna go for about a 2-year deal. So, it's unfortunate. It's not great for probably consumers, but there is a positive way of looking at this. and that is that you'll probably get more rugby on the one broadcaster because TNT have picked up other rights in the last couple of months. So yeah, we'll wait. But again, for me, this is just negotiation time. They are going to get the rights. It's going to be for a reduced rate, and we'll take it from there. In terms of rugby coming up this weekend, we've got URC, we've got Prem action, top 14, Pacific Four series, as you mentioned, MLOR and PWR is also back. The big game on Sunday. We'll have the full details in our Friday morning breakfast pod. I think that pretty much covers the broadcasting news. Hugh, any final thoughts?
No final thoughts from me. Just a huge thank you to our first ever international player coach guest. We've all learned so much. I'm sure I'm going to get tons of incredibly nice comments off people saying, what an amazing guest, what an amazing guest. So, Vuyo, you're going to be on more podcasts, I'm sure, off the back of this. And I'll certainly be tuning into them. So thank you so much, my friend, for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you. I really appreciate the invite. And let's see how the pod goes. Maybe when I'm in your areas, I will just maybe buy one of the T-shirts as well.
Yes.
Thanks, Vuyo. I really appreciate coming on. And thanks, folks.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.